Superhuman eyes. Accelerated evolution.
Welcome to an extraordinary episode of the Superhumanized podcast, where today we're leaping into the depths of spirituality, consciousness, and the very fabric of our existence with one of the most transformative voices of our time. Imagine a conversation so profound it alters the trajectory of lives, a dialogue so powerful it bridges the human with the divine. Today, we have the privilege of sharing such a conversation with you as we welcome Neil Donald Walsh to our show. Neil isn't just an author of, to this date, 40 books. He's a modern-day mystic whose words have echoed in the hearts of millions around the globe. His seminal work, Conversations with God, isn't just a book. It's a global spiritual movement and a lifeline for those seeking answers to the most fundamental questions of our existence. Today, Neil joins us, not just to share, but to inspire, to challenge, and to awaken the divine essence that resides within each of us. Neil, welcome to Superhumanized. My heart is so full and so happy that I get the opportunity to be in your presence today and share you and your work with the audience. Immense gratitude to you.
Thank you, my friend. It's very sweet of you to say that, and I'm glad to be here. How may I serve you?
Oh, gosh. With your wisdom, with your light, I have so many questions. And I would like to begin with a question that I'm certain you've answered many times. However, I think it would be a good preface for the conversation. In your journey, you've transformed literally millions of lives around the globe. And I would love to know from you, was there a particular moment where you felt your intimate conversation with God transition from what was a private dialogue to a message that the world needed to hear?
I was told, Ariana, in the dialogue itself. I can't remember exactly when chronologically, but it wasn't late. It was about maybe one quarter of the way through the back and forth question and answer process in which I found myself engaged for the very first time. This process, by the way, went on for a number of years, but I don't mean to suggest every hour for a number of years, but periodically across the years, I was having these conversations with God. But in the very first conversation, gosh, I might have been, who knows, 10 or 12 hours into it. And at some point early in that exchange, I was told this: Neil, you will make of this a book, and it will be read by many people. Mm-hmm. You know what I thought? I thought, now I gotcha. Now we're going to find out whether this is true or not, because that's not good. There's no chance in the world that any publisher, I could self-publish, anybody can self-publish a book, but no legitimate publishing company is going to put out a book by a man because he claims he's talking to God. Come on. I can just see the publisher rushing out to the workroom floor, saying to his editors, hold everything, stop the presses. I got a guy here who's talking to God. It's not going to happen. It was a one chance in a million. Ariana, I sent my handwritten notes after I had gone through several more days of this experience on a dare, really. I was daring God. I thought, you know what? Show me. Show me this is not my imagination, that I'm not making it all up, that this is really what I experience it as being, a conversation with God. Show me. Make it happen, because it's not going to get published. So I sent it off to two or three, not 20 or 30, but I remember maybe it was four or five publishers. I sent my manuscript as it had been developed up to that point, just to see what would happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my phone rang about a week and a half later. I couldn't believe it. It was a publishing house on the East Coast, not a major, it wasn't like Putnam or Random House, but it was a reputable publishing house on the East Coast. And the man said, "We'd like to publish your material." I said, "Oh my gosh, you're kidding me. You want to put this out into the world?" The guy said, "Oh, it's a great work of fiction. It's a fabulous book." And I said, "Whoa, wait a minute. This is not a work of fiction. You can't publish it as a fiction book." The guy thought it was a novel about a man who is having a novel experience, frankly, imagining that he's talking to God. So the publisher says to me, "Are you telling me this actually happened in real life?" I said, "Absolutely. This is, you have the notes from my actual ongoing experience." He said, "I don't know if we can put that book out as a nonfiction book. It's not really, people are going to want to buy a book by a guy who legitimately claims he's talking to God and that God is talking directly to him and through him. Nobody's going to buy that book. They're going to write it off. Be lucky if we saw 500 copies. I said, "Then don't put it out. Don't publish it." He said, "No, our guys over here like the material. We're going to put it out. But if you insist, we'll put it out as a nonfiction book, but it's not going to sell 500 copies." He's right. He was totally right. It did not sell 500 copies. Sold 5 million. Not bragging, just saying that when God says something, you probably should listen to what she has to say. It wound up being published in 37 languages. Mm-hmm. It wound up being published around the world. Again, not boasting, just astonishingly noticing what occurred here. Mm-hmm. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
And a beautiful story it is. Speaking about stories, Neil, there is something you said recently on an online summit of Mind Valley. Love the company, love Vishen Lakhiani and what he puts forth into the world. And you said all of us are capable to escape the prison of our story. You are not your story, not your past. You're not what happened to you. And you pose the question, who would we be without our story? And I would love for you to illuminate this also for today's audience. Who are we without our story?
That's a question that each of us is given the opportunity by God, if I could put it that way, mm-hmm. and by life itself, if you please, to answer. Mm-hmm. That really is the quintessential question of all time that all of us have been placed on earth to provide an answer for. My father, I like to tell the anecdote that my father asked me, and this is not a joke, he really did, maybe 100 times from the time I turned 13 until the time I left the house when I was 18. He must have asked me 100 times, "Who do you think you are anyway?" But he didn't mean it as an actual inquiry. He meant it as an exclamation. But I realized that in retrospect, he was asking me, as I said, the quintessential question of all time, because that is the question. Who are we? And many people, myself included, until I had my conversations with God experience, many people think that they are, in fact, their story. Everything that happened to me is who I am. The good stuff and mostly the bad stuff is who I am. Especially if really bad stuff happened to us, if we were abused as children, God forbid, or if we had a parent die when we were young, or whatever might have happened as it was tragic in our experience, we imagine that's our story. Then we step into the living of that story and cause it to be repeated in various forms for the rest of our time here on the planet. So what God said to me was, "Neil, you're not that story." I said, "Then what story am I?" And God said, "Then you tell me." I said, "No, you're supposed to tell me." And God said, "You're the one with all the answers." And I said, "Lord, you're the one with all the answers." And God said, "I see you don't understand how this is working. I have placed within you the ability and the power to write your own new story. You get to decide who you are. I can only give you one little tiny clue. You are whatever you decide you want to do in order to manifest it, you are an aspect of me. Neil, you're an individuation of divinity. How you want that to appear in your life? Whether you want to be a plumber in Pittsburgh, play first base for the New York Yankees, or whatever it is you want to do, and however it is you want to be in the world, that's up to you. That's my gift to you. Tell me how you want to experience yourself. If you could have your wildest dreams come true. I said to God, wait a minute. Come on. Will you tell me I can have my wildest dreams come true? And God said, that's what I'm telling you. To which I replied, it sounds too good to be true. It's too good to be true. And God answered, sweetheart, if God can't be too good to be true, who can? So I thought, okay, she's not kidding. He really means what he's saying. So then I asked God to call the questions one would ask. How do I do that? How can I live the life of my dreams? And God said, I'm sorry, Ariana, I didn't mean to launch into a 25-minute answer to your 4-minute question. But just to finish my little half-hour anecdote, I said, how do I do that? And what's the process? God said, you asked. I place within you the ability to, in fact, materialize whatever it is you wish to experience. However, be clear about this, Neil. Who you are, if you want to really live the life of your dreams, will have nothing to do with what you're doing. It's not about your career. It's not about your livelihood. It's not about how rich you become or famous you become or it's not about anything you're doing, really. It's about what you're being while you do whatever you're doing. What you're being when you're washing the dishes. What you're being when you're taking the dogs for the walk. And what you're being when you do anything. So allow your doingness, Neil. This was an interesting way that God put it. Allow your doingness not to be your attempt to be something. If I do this, I can be happy. If I do this, I can be rich. If I do this, I can be famous. If I do this, I can be loved. But rather, God said, put your beingness first. If I am being loving, if I am being secure, if I am being happy, if I am being wise, then I would do the things that a person who is being that would do. And that changed the whole way I saw the operation that we call life. So God said, make a list of things you'd like to be. I said, I'd like to be wise. I'd like to think that I was being and that I am loving. I'd like to be caring. I'd like to be compassionate. God said, this is turning out to be a very good list. Keep it up, Neil. And so I decided to be so many things that, frankly, Ariana wasn't in the beginning of my life, in the early days of my adult years. I wouldn't call myself the most compassionate person. I wasn't necessarily the most loving person. I did some things that I'm not really proud of. I did a couple of things I'm, frankly, quite ashamed of. I had an affair and so forth and so on. So what was I thinking? What the heck was I thinking? Is this who I really want to be? I should explain to our audience that I didn't have my conversation with God until I was 53 years old. I wasn't like 26 or 34 or even 45. I was in the middle of my 50s. I had, frankly, thrown the first 50 years of my life away in the sense that I simply wasn't giving myself permission or the awareness to be what I really wished to be in my life. Not that since that time I've become a walking saint. Actually, I really am a walking saint. Now that I think about it, I've got everything here, though, including humility. I'm the most humble person you ever want to meet. Obviously not. But But I have changed my ways a little bit. I've stepped into being the person that I've always wanted to be, and then allowed myself to do those things that a person who is being that would do. Because God said, I want you to know this, Neil. You guys down there are not called human doings. You're called human beings. So that's the formula that has worked in my life. Yes. What would I be doing if I was being wise, compassionate, understanding, forgiving, helpful, and kind? And boy, I dropped certain behaviors, chose never to do those things again, and I adopted certain behaviors, chose to do those things, really, for the first time in my life. Mm-hmm. Turned my whole life around. And I have to say again, not bragging, but just saying that many people who have read the Conversations with God dialogues, and there are 9 books in the series, have told me the same thing. That is, they have embraced the notions, the mysteries, the truths that they have found in the dialogue, and brought them into their own life in a way that's changed their experience of who they are as well. So thanks for the question and for giving me the freedom to answer it.
Absolutely. And all the time you desire, this is what we're here for. I am so honored to have the space for your wisdom to pour forth, for your experience to pour forth. And what you just shared, Neil, I want to also highlight your conversations with God, your books in general. Your work has also influenced my life in such a beautiful way. And the being versus doing, especially in cultures that are very much geared towards doing, what you do is what you are. And in a capitalist, consumerist society, doing is highly valued. People may have a little difficulty shifting when it's so deeply ingrained.
You know what? Forgive me for interrupting, but I have to stop you because I want to reply to that. I think you're right. But the shift will come, by the way, in this planet, on the Earth, we should realize that. Shift happens. Mm-hmm. Little play on words there.
I love it.
But we can make that shift from who we used to be to who we are. At least you make that shift away from thinking that what we're doing is the most important thing by understanding that God is not saying to us we shouldn't be doing anything. This is not about eliminating doingness from your life. This is not about doing nothing. This is about changing why you do the things you do. You can still do all the doingness you want to do. Engage yourself in all the activities that you, but for an entirely different reason. Not in order, as I said a minute ago, not in order to be something, but because you are something. And you're choosing to simply demonstrate it. So do what it is you love to do as a demonstration of who you have decided to be, not as an attempt to be something.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you for clarifying that, Neil. Yes, that resonates really deeply. Something else that I already have integrated that into my life. Nevertheless, it always provokes deep thought in me. I contemplate it. In your words, you said, there's only one word in God's vocabulary, and that is yes. And if I remember correctly, you said, as you speak, think, feel it, so it will be done unto you.
I'm not the first person to have said that. Spiritual teachers, of which I am not, by the way. I don't claim to be a spiritual teacher. I'm just and by the way, you've used the phrase 2 or 3 times since we began our interaction. You talked about my wisdom. I want to make it very clear to your audience, I don't have any wisdom to share. If someone were to look at my own reservoir of knowledge, they would not say that I'm a wise person. But have I at least had the clarity to share the wisdom that has been given to me to share? Yes, that I have done. So there's no question that there's some wisdom to be shared that has been given to all of us in the conversations with God. Books. I forgot where I was going with that. I started to answer your question.
Oh, no, thank you for also for sharing this, Neil. And it is noted and received with great love and respect. My question was with regards to the teaching, the realization that there is only one word in God's vocabulary, and that being yes.
Oh, yes, that's right. Thank you for reminding me. Yes, I was starting to say I'm not the first person clearly to have made that point or to have said that. It's been said by those who are truly spiritual masters throughout the ages. One of them actually said, as you believe it, so will it be done unto you. There's also a wonderful book, a little handbook written by a man named James Allen. Mm-hmm. It was written many years ago, but it's called As a Man Thinketh. Mm-hmm. And the book As a Man Thinketh makes the same point. It says, as you think. And of course, to say nothing of as you speak, so will it be done unto you. And there are many other people who have made that exact point. Norman Vincent Peale, a Christian minister in 1949, wrote an astonishing book called The Power of Positive Thinking. I read that book when I was 45 or 43 years old. I had heard about it, but I never read it. To me, it felt like an old book from way back when. But then I thought, you know what, why not pick it up and read it? So I went to the library and I found a copy of The Power of Positive Thinking. Marvelous, marvelous, insightful book. So, and there have been many other books written on the subject as well. Not a few, but many. So it's very clear then that the point that God made with me in conversations with God is, Neil, I only say yes. It's only one word in my vocabulary, as you pointed out, Ariana. I say yes to everything. What you think, what you say, I say yes. So if, to use a lighthearted example, I'm driving downtown to go to a very important event, and my wife says, we're never going to find a parking space. I say, yeah, I know, you're right. We're never going to find a parking space. And we don't. I have to park like 8 blocks away and walk forever to get back to the venue. But these days, I don't think that way. I think, no, we're going to find a parking space. Yeah, even though we're going to a venue that thousands of people are going to be attending, sure enough, as soon as I come around the corner, somebody is, for whatever reason, pulling out of their parking space. And my wife says to me all the time, how do you do that? Are you the parking gods on your side? I said, God is on all of our sides because she only says yes to whatever we put out there. So if that means be careful what you're thinking, look clearly at what you're saying, yes, I would agree. Because we've been given an amazing tool, an incredible mechanism. We call it metaphysics. Mm-hmm. And the metaphysical mechanism tells us, in fact, that we have the power to energetically influence the world around us. So I never look for parking spaces anymore. There's always one for me.
Yeah. Yes, I experience very similar things, and I find that it works this way, happens this way, flows this way. When I am just in certainty and a very loving undercurrent, when there's a neediness or an anxiety attached to it, it doesn't really work.
You know what I've learned, Ariana? I have to be divorced from the need for a particular outcome. Mm-hmm. So I stand back from any need for a particular result. God called need the first of the 10 illusions of humans. That need does not exist, but we create in our mind the idea that we need something in order to be happy. But in fact, we're making it all up. I've giving myself permission to stand back from any requirement for a particular outcome. And that opens the gates for whatever shows up to show up. And you know what I do? This is going to be an interesting metaphysical turn of phrase. Whatever shows up, I make the best of it. And I don't mean I make the best of it in the traditional sense of that phrase. I literally make the best of it. I find a way to use whatever shows up to my best advantage. Mm-hmm. That too has changed my entire life.
I would like to know, so for you, for example, when you meant what you just talked about, anything that shows up, you will make use to, so it's really the best outcome. For the best outcome in your life.
The outcome that serves my soul's agenda.
Yes. So the highest good for your soul's agenda, if I understand correctly, yes?
My soul's agenda is for me to announce and declare, to express and fulfill, to become and experience who I really am. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My true identity as an individuation of divinity.
Mm-hmm. The realization or the embodiment of this is how you will encounter life. Was it an immediate thing or did it need practice?
Let me just see. Hey, pal, she's asking me whether it was an immediate thing or whether it needs practice. I know you're laughing. I was laughing too when she said it. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Bye. He says, your whole life is a practice. That's why we call it spiritual practice.
Uh-huh.
So it's a spiritual practice. Yes. It wasn't an immediate thing. I've been practicing and Ariana, I haven't gotten there. I want to be real clear with the audience here. I don't want anyone to think that I imagine myself to have gotten there, that is, I've arrived somehow or another as a manifestation of life mastery. No, I know it. But is my life going better now than it ever did before? I'll say yes to that because I'm practicing, because I continue to practice. But yes, of course, I've been practicing for a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it didn't just happen like that, and it still hasn't happened completely and fully. But at least, you know what? At least I know now where I'm going. Mm-hmm. At least I know now the path that I wish to take. At least I know now what I'm doing here, what the point of all this is. Before I had my conversations with God, Ariana, I had no idea what all this was about. I thought, what am I doing here? Oh, I know what it is. I learned what it is when I was 13 years old, or 15 maybe. Get the girl, get the car, get the job, you know, get the better job, get the better car, get the better girl, get the house, get the spouse, get the kids, get the office in the corner with your name on the door, get the building on the corner with your name on the building, get the gray hair, get the grandkids, get the retirement watch, get the cruise tickets, get the illness, and get the hell out. And yeah, that was my life formula because it's what I was seeing all over my culture. I saw people living that little punchline. I've made a little joke of it because it's really a joke, because it's not the way life was intended to be experienced. But I really did think that when I was 15, 18, 25, 35, and even 45. It took me until I was 53 years old to drop those ideas about, that's what I'm up to here. Get the guy, get the girl, get the car, get the job, get the house, get the whatever. I got it all, and then I lost it all. You may know my history. I wound up, because of a series of life events, I wound up having to live on the street. on the sidewalk, not exaggerating, sleeping on the concrete for a year of my life, not for a couple of bad weeks or a tough month, but for a year of my life, sleeping outside, living in the weather, waking up every morning without 25 cents to my name, not knowing if I was going to eat anything at all that day, going to one person after the other with my hand out, begging, please, sir, anything would help. Even a quarter, even a half dollar, anything would help, please. And having lost my human dignity to the point where, because people don't often think about this, but where does a street person even use the bathroom?
Yeah.
I had to sneak into restaurants, try to slip into the nearest McDonald's and see if I could get into the men's room before the manager saw me, because I had hair down to the middle of my back. Of course, couldn't afford a haircut. That was out of the question. I was wearing the same clothes. I had only one outfit. I wasn't walking around with a wardrobe. I had two shirts, one pair of jeans. That was about it. So I didn't smell that good, didn't look that good. Obviously, a person living on the street. And the manager of the restaurant, if they saw me, would come to me and say, no, out, no, don't. I'd say, oh, please, I'd plead. They said, no, we don't want you panhandling the guests. You're going to be begging the guests for money. I said, no, I didn't come in here for that. That's not why I came in. Probably, please, could I just use the bathroom? I need to use the toilet, please. Human mercy. And finally, one manager, I'll never forget this guy, of one of the local fast food joints said, okay, fair enough. In and out, make a deal, in and out. No talking to anybody, no panhandling anybody. Even if you find guys in there, no panhandling anybody. If somebody comes out here and tells me that you asked them for money, I said, I promise I won't. He said, okay, if you play by the rules, you can come here whenever you need to. I said, really? Oh my God, I found a bathroom. I lived that way for a year of my life. Let me tell you, you want to know what it's like to figure out what your life priorities really are? Take all the money out of your handbag, leave it at home. Walk outside, don't take a shower for 3 days, and just do it for a weekend. Forget about a year. Just do it from Friday morning at 9 o'clock until Monday evening. And tell me how you survived without a nickel in your pocket. Tell me how it worked out. And of course, without selling your body.
Yeah, and that is something that is unfathomable for most of us. I'm getting choked up here. I cannot walk by a person who, from circumstance, seems like they do not have a home to go to. My heart cracks wide open every time. And I would like to know from you, Neil, from this experience that you had, what would you like for people to know when they walk by a person that obviously is in this kind of situation?
That the person was drawn to them, by them, as an opportunity for them to announce and declare, to express and fulfill, to demonstrate and experience who they really are. What I want people to know is there's no such thing as happenstance. Nothing happens by coincidence. So see that person as a gift to you. They're hoping you will give a gift to them. But if you're thinking with clarity, you will realize that they're giving a gift to you. And so when you take that folding money out of your pocket and put it in that man's little cup or his basket, and he looks up and he says, thank you so much, you say to him, no, thank you so much for giving me a chance to demonstrate who I really am. And I wish you well on your way. That's what I would invite people to do. Now, I've had some people say to me, well, I don't like to give money to the homeless because a lot of them just use it to buy booze or drugs or whatever. They're going to misuse it. And I tell people, please, because having been out there for a year, I was subjected to that kind of judgment. And I actually had a few people, not many, but one or two would say, you just want to use it to buy something, to get something to drink. And I would say, sir, honestly, I haven't eaten really well in 3 days. If you could just spare me anything, I give you my word as a human being, one to the other. I promise you, I'm going to use it for food. When you have to convince people that you're not the worst person in the world. But you know what? This is not to suggest that some of them are not using it for booze or drugs. But Conversations with God said something to me that I never forgot. Neil, allow each person to walk his paths.
Yes. And that's where I also think it is when I do get to share a dollar or a few dollars, whatever I can share, it is not my job to judge. And if the individual in the situation, if alcohol gives them solace or warmth from the inside, it is not my place to judge.
I couldn't agree with you more. Thank you for adopting that point of view. And I always make sure I tell people, keep a 20. Mm-hmm. Forget about 50 cents or a dollar. Mm-hmm. Just keep a spare 20 in your pocket. Call it your traveling money. Mm-hmm. And when you encounter, if it's once every 6 or 8 days, there's a person who reach into your handbag or reach into your pocket and grab that 20. Mm-hmm. And drop it into the basket.
Yeah.
The guy will look up at you and say, are you kidding? I said, no. Take it in good health. Be my guest. Go well, my friend. Go well on your journey.
Yes.
And then you move forward on your own.
There's something about that for all of us. It is such a fundamental thing. And I imagine, especially when you may feel completely isolated from other human beings by situation, the simple occurrence, exchange, the fact of being seen and seeing another human being.
Yes, and it goes way past money, of course. It'd be just that generous with your love, with your caring, with your compassion, with your understanding, as well as with your generosity, and not just your financial generosity, but your emotional generosity as well. I know all about emotional generosity. I happen to be married to one of the most emotionally generous people I've ever met, and I say to her most days of my life, you are the most emotionally generous person. If I need patience, if I need understanding, if I need compassion, if I need someone with awareness, whatever it is that my emotional need is, you are there with it. What heaven did you drop out of? Yeah. And you know what my darling wife says to me?
Uh-huh.
I'm simply duplicating what I found in you. Now, that's not said as a boast. I'm saying that for a reason. I want people to hear what I just said. What you send out comes back to you.
Yeah. And
what goes around comes around.
And however you see whatever in other people, you may just bring it forth.
Voila.
That's why I practice to always see with the heart, as the little prince said. I practice to see with love.
Yes. See with your heart. Forget about your mind. In order to really move through life in a way that makes sense, you have to be quite literally out of your mind.
Yes. Yes, out of your mind and deeply connected to your heart, which I have made the experience as a quite sensitive child, very empathetic child that, and you know, people surrounding me as I was growing up and who were supporting me, trying to give me guidelines for life, doing the best with what they could. A side effect of that guidance was emotions being shamed. So it took me quite a while later on to actually unfreeze my heart.
Boy, did I ever hear that one? Big boys don't cry. Son, big boys don't cry. Excuse me? Mm-hmm. So I know what you're saying. We have lived in the culture where we are told that our emotions are not okay. But if we allow ourselves to realize that an emotion is energy in motion, that's why it's called emotion. It's an energy in motion. So all we need to decide is what kind of energy do we want to put into motion as we move through the days of our lives? And that's a question we can ask ourselves each morning when we arise. What energy do I choose to put into motion today? This hour, this day, this week, this month, this year, this lifetime. What energy do I wish to put into motion? And then the how will arise in your life. You know what's interesting about that, Farianna? When I decided what energy I wanted to put into motion, how to do that came to me. That is, opportunities came to me out of my desire to express a particular emotion. I can recall vividly, this is one of the most vivid examples of that, if I could tell a little anecdote, but I remember choosing actively because I made a decision. I just want to be a person who's compassionate and understanding and there for other people. And that was just a decision I made. I didn't know how I was going to do that. I had no idea. You know, I just knew what I wanted to be. Yep. Part of my agenda was to put that beingness state, that state of being, into motion, to put it into reality, make it reality in my life. I'm having dinner with a friend, and the doorbell rings. And we didn't expect to meet guests. We're having dinner together. But she goes to the door, and it's her sister. And her sister says, "I'm sorry to bother you. I'm sorry. I didn't realize you had a guest. I won't bother you." And of course, my friend said, "Oh, no, by all means, come in." She said, "No, you don't understand. I'm really at the end of my rope. I don't know what to do. I'm going to just do myself in. I'm done with this. I'm going to kill myself. She said, "Oh, my God, come in. What's going on?" And she came in. She sat on the couch, and she started crying. And my friend, with whom I was having dinner, looked at me and said, she didn't say it out loud, she mouthed the words, "Say something." So I sat down next to this person. I said, "Hi, my name is Neil. I'm a friend of your sister's. We haven't met, but maybe there's something I could help you with. And maybe it's a good thing that I'm not your sister or a relative because I don't know anything about your story. So tell me, what's going on?" And she was so relieved, actually, to talk to someone who hadn't heard her story before that she gave her the freedom to say, "Well," and she went on and we sat on that couch for the better part of the evening. We were there for probably 45 minutes or an hour, just talking back and forth, being quieter and quieter. And finally, she had calmed down. And she said to her sister, "Could I use the powder room? I must look a mess." And her sister said, "Oh, of course, you know where it is, upstairs on first door at the top of the stairs." So her sister left, and my friend sat down next to me. "How did you know what to say?" I said, "Sweetheart, not only do I can't tell you how I knew what to say, I don't even know what I said. I couldn't repeat it if you paid me to. All I know is that what needed to be said in those moments is what came to me to say." She said, "I think you just changed the person's life right in front of me." I said, "I didn't do that. But I know in my mind I was saying, that's what happens when you decide to be something." Mm-hmm. My decision to be compassionate, caring, kind, and more aware. I wanted to be more aware to people. I wanted to be more present for people. I'm certain is what magnetized that particular experience to me. Ringing the doorbell of my dinner friend's home and providing me with a unique opportunity to fulfill my desire. Because God only says yes. Yeah. You want to be compassionate, caring, understanding, forgiving, and aware? Watch what happens in the next 3 days of your life.
Mm-hmm. You get the opportunity. Right. I've experienced it myself. I've experienced it deeply, and I am so grateful I did. And I'm so grateful I will continue doing so. What you just said is so interesting. That not only did you not know what to say, you don't remember what you said. Was this something coming through you?
Yes, it felt that way. It felt I was being given words to say. But I want to make this clear. I don't think it was coming through me from a source outside of myself. I think I was calling it forward from a source within me.
Yes.
But God made very clear to me, Ms. Neal, I have placed a part of me in every sentient being in the cosmos. You have the wisdom, you have the clarity, you have the understanding, you have the compassion, you have the presence of mind and the presence of heart and the presence of your soul that all resides within you. Simply call it forth. But don't try to figure out what it's going to look like. It will show itself to you. Simply move into the desire, just as you did in this particular instance. And then you're calling it forth from within yourself. So yes, I think I brought it through. I think I brought it through from a source from which I'm disconnected. I think I brought it through from a source that resides within all of us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's a very important distinction. You talk about the four cornerstones of the human experience, sex, love, money, and God. And why this pops up in my mind right now is because there's a huge amount of shame and guilt attached oftentimes to these, and especially when we talk about God and when people basically say and know and may express this, that yes, I go direct with God. I go direct with God. And how that, depending on where you are in the world, may get looked at strangely, maybe celebrated, or you may even go get incarcerated for it. Or in times way back when, you could get burned.
Sometimes, not even times way back when. What we're talking about is still considered in some cultures an ecclesiastical offense. It's called blasphemy. It's called apostasy. It's called heresy. What? What? You're claiming that God is actually inspiring you directly, personally? And because this violates the tenets, it violates the teachings of most of the world's religions. So we're taught that, in fact, unless you're the Pope, maybe, or the Archbishop of Canterbury, or the head ulama, or the chief rabbi, but unless you're somebody with at least some kind of spiritual credential, God is not going to talk directly to you or through you. Come on. Really, to quote my father's question, who do you think you are anyway? Mm-hmm. So in order for us to step into that experience, we have to be willing to, how would I put it, violate the dictums of our cultural story. They tell us that God is not going to talk directly to you. And don't you even begin to think, much less a mouth, that God is communicating directly to you. We have to be willing to embrace the courage to stand up against that story and to say, I'm sorry, but that's not true. God speaks to all of us and in all of us and through all of us all the time. The question is not, to whom is God talking? The question is, who's listening?
Yes.
I could, of course, be wrong about all of this.
And you could not. Yeah, I hear you, Neil. the willingness here is a really important part of it, as is also to step into and embrace our worthiness. This is something you write about in your latest book, God Talk, where, you know, it's all about it's God Talk experiences of humanity's connection with a higher power. And it's a beautiful book. This concept of worthiness, I would like to explore a little further here.
We just went over that. We have to really agree with ourselves that was, at least in my case, I'm not going to speak for anybody else, but with all of my faults and foibles, and I'm pretty clear, Ariana, I've been married 7 times. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about 7 live-in partners, 7 lovers. I'm saying that I put a ring on the finger and promised my life to 7 individuals. I'm not bragging about that. I'm ashamed of it. I'm embarrassed about it. But I'm sharing it now to make the point. With that kind of a background and all the other untoward things I've done in my life, why would God talk to me, of all people, talk about being unworthy to be spoken to directly by God? And then I remembered, oh, that's right. I forgot all about Mary Magdalene. Oh, that's right. I forgot all about the whore that the men were going to stone to death, until this interesting guy walked up to him and said, let he who is without sin among you cast the first stone. And they all dropped their stones and walked away. Oh, I see. If God is going to talk to anyone, she's going to talk to those of us who need to hear her the most, not who need to hear her the least. Of course, God said to me, Neil, sweetheart, stop it. Cut it out. Stop it. There's a way to have relationships with other people. And with these people you want to call your wives, there's a way to live in the world that doesn't hurt other people and that doesn't hurt yourself as well. Yes, worthiness was a big factor for me, but I had to realize when I was finally clear enough to understand, of course, God would naturally talk first, probably. I'm making it up there, but not that God has it in a priority order. But if God is going to talk to anybody, he's going to be the one who needs to hear it the most. Mm-hmm. The result of which is I should help people to know the closure of that particular story. I've been married to my present wife, my 7th wife. I'm like Henry VIII with 7 wives, but I've been married to my 7th wife for 16 years, which for me is a record, obviously, because I found a person who is more emotionally generous than I could possibly be, because I have chosen to be as emotionally generous as I could possibly be with all those whose lives I touch. And that changed everything for me, because unworthy me had a conversation with God. So yes, all of us are worthy. If God, I promise you this much, guys, those of you who are observing this program, if God will talk to me, she'll talk to anybody.
Neil, thank you for sharing from your personal life's experience here. When we talk about love and sex, especially within the certain culture scapes that we live in, and you just mentioned God expressing there's a way of living with your 7 wives in a form where it doesn't hurt anyone. Now, obviously, these are very deeply personal choices. I personally believe that everybody should have the freedom to define for themselves and with whoever they have a relationship, what a relationship consists of. what are the things that are at the core of the relationship? How do you express them? That being said, we're also living in a time where a lot of, quote, alternative models of how to live a relationship, how to love, how to be sexual are offered. Amongst them, anything variation from, let's say, if you're married, an open marriage to people who identify as being polyamorous, which means not only are you open to and seek connections with other people, but you can hold in your heart multiple romantic, deeply meaningful relationships in your heart. That's just how you're made. What is your personal take on the general, you can't even call them suggestions because they're pretty much rules or options that we're given by society, as in this is how this needs to look. We talked before about how you get the degree, you get the car, the house, the girl. So what is your take on the, quote, suggestions/rules that surround especially these realms of love and sex?
I think there's only one rule, and I wouldn't even call it a rule, but I would say one highly recommended way of being. Not because it's a rule, but because it serves you at the highest level. The one highly recommended way of being in my world is truthful.
Mm-hmm.
If we are, talk about sexuality, naked with each other, not just physically naked, but emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, naked with each other, where everything is said, everything is shown, everything is seen. And if we only choose to engage in behaviors inside of a relationship to which both partners agree, so that nobody is hurt by any decision or choice that we make. If that's the single rule, if you please, if we want to use that word that you follow, that's sufficient. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, there are no rules.
Mm-hmm. I full-heartedly agree, Neil. And I love that you use the word truthfulness. To me, that's a word that encompasses the truthfulness towards the partner or partners and the truthfulness towards self as far as expressing who you truly are.
Yes, to thine own self be true, and it follows as the night the day, thou then canst not be false to any man.
Mm-hmm.
Bill had it right. Bill knew exactly what he was talking about. He also wrote the following line: there are more things in heaven and earth ratio than are dreamt of in your philosophy.
Yes.
And he also wrote the following interesting line, one of the great metaphysicians of all time, Bill was for sure. Bill also wrote, to be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to rise up against a sea of troubles, and by opposing to end them. To die, to sleep, perchance, to dream. Aye, there's the rub. Mm. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come. So yes, to thine own self be true. And it follows as the night, the day, thou then canst not be false to any man.
Yes.
Or any woman.
Yeah. And for individuals who may be struggling with their truth, who they be, and who may be afraid of expressing that, this mere fact that we are shows that we are good. We've been born into this world. It's a yes to us, so to speak. That realization for me has freed me from a lot of fear.
Yes. I have a new acronym for fear: being excited and ready.
feeling excited and ready.
Yep. Fear, feeling excited and ready.
Yes.
That's what fear means to me. It's like I felt when I was getting ready to get on the roller coaster when I was 9 years old at the carnival.
Yes.
I was afraid of the roller coaster. I heard all the kids screaming and hollering, but I wanted to get on the ride anyway. So I gave the man my dime to buy a ticket to get on the roller coaster because I was experiencing fear. I was feeling excited and ready.
Yes. I love that, Neil. Yes, that is beautiful. Speaking from my own experience also, there's times when you feel inside of yourself and you don't quite feel the love or something. And I'm practicing. Sometimes I'm not in the state of love to make decisions from or move forward from. And there's a state of fear. So just thinking about this, feeling excited and ready, there's a shift.
Yes, shift happens.
Shift happens. I love it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I've really enjoyed being with you here today, Ariana. Thank you for the opportunity.
I did so too, Neil. Thank you so much for being so gracious with your time and sharing of yourself. It's been a profound pleasure.
For me as well.
Hey, everyone. If you're as passionate about transforming your life and reaching your peak performance as I am, I invite you to join my newsletter. Think of it as your weekly dose of inspiration and knowledge to supercharge your journey to becoming superhuman. Start optimizing mentally, physically, and spiritually today. Just head over to superhumanize.com/newsletter and sign up. Trust me, your future self will thank you.